Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Tackling the issues that shape our state. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, great to have John Jackson, the Joker from X, in the house. I know it may feel like a Monday, but it's Tuesday, so great to have the Joker in the house with us. Not only here for the 8 o'clock hour, but hopefully he'll stick around for the 9 o'clock hour as well. John, you just asked me a question. You said, hey, did you hear about the Nashville mayor? Tell us about the mayor of Nashville, Tennessee.
Comes out yesterday that there is now a federal investigation into Nashville Mayor Freddie O'Connell for aiding and abetting illegal immigration. And that's yet another one. How many do we have now? It's got to be at least four or five that are up in the middle of this. And Tom Holman said this months ago, if you get in our way, we're coming after you. And that's what you need to go after these people. Indict them federally, follow it all the way through, fullest extent of the law. Let me tell you something. Federal charges are not state charges. They are a whole nother animal.
Yeah. And this is follows. There was a judge in Wisconsin who was sneaking an illegal alien out the back door to avoid ICE. And then a smart ICE agent, you know, basically kind of had a good eye on the guy, tracked him down, followed him. The guy tried to run off. They nabbed him. They grabbed him. And now that judge is being prosecuted. And then, of course, you had a former judge down in New Mexico who literally was providing shelter at his own house for a Trinidad Aragua gangbanger thug illegal alien. It's just crazy. Some have suggested, you know, you've had some people say, well, can't they bring up this Gallatin County attorney on federal charges? She's very, very sneakily trying to stand in the way of ICE while still coming up short of outright violating federal law. But I think one thing Attorney General Austin Knutson pointed out is how she is really ignoring some key Montana laws last week as well. So that'll be an interesting one to follow.
Ask yourself this. If this was reversed and these people were in any way not cooperating with investigators looking at January 6th people, what do you think the Biden regime would have done? What do you think Merrick Garland would have done? You think he's worried about whether they actually violated a law? Hell no. I mean, open the investigation, don't make them public, drag them in front of grand jury, subpoena their records, the whole bit.
And that would, of course, be federal. Yeah, that's a good point. So could the federal attorney general's office basically come in and at least conduct an investigation? Because certainly seems like where there's smoke, there's fire. And there is a lot of smoke in the Gallatin Valley with these Gallatin County Democrats doing whatever they can to basically, you know, stand in the way of ICE.
They showed us with their persecution of all of us, of Donald Trump, that they were not worried about the law. They were worried about a result and going after their political opponents. And so now you want to stop that. You have to return that punch in the face to the bully.
Well, but I still think our side is going to be worried about the law. It was their rejection of the law that caused so much chaos in the first place. But I think the bigger picture here is an investigation itself. Mm-hmm. We'll see just what exactly is happening in Gallatin County. Worst problem with illegal aliens in the state. So at the very least, a federal investigation, if it hasn't already been opened up, very clearly should.
The process is the punishment.
All right. Hold that thought. More with John Jackson right after this.
It's May 27th, and this is your Fox Daily Snapshot. Today is National Grape Popsicle Day. The popsicle has long been a tasty treat that's nearly synonymous with the arrival of warmer weather. The history of the popsicle dates back to 1905 in San Francisco, California, as a young Frank Epperson discovered he made the dessert completely by accident. Nearly 20 years later, he patented the frozen sweet as the Epsicle, later changing the name to the Popsicle. Also on this date, in 1958, Ernest Green becomes the first African-American student to graduate from Central High School in Little Rock, Arkansas. Just a year earlier, Green was part of the Little Rock Nine, who had to be escorted into the segregated school by federal troops as members of the Arkansas National Guard blocked their entry into the building. If it's your birthday today, you share it with former Secretary of State and Nobel Peace Prize winner Dr. Henry Kissinger, born in 1923. I'm Tushar Saxena, and that's your Fox Daily Snapshot.
Hey, Clay, if there was a summer camp for critical thinking, we'd be the chief counselors. Those jellyheads in June would be intellectual warriors by August. Be a lot of fun, too. Some Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure references thrown in.
This podcast, like a daily dose of that, minus the campfires, archery, and pranking the girls.
The bona fide boot camp for critical thinking. You can get in on it for free at the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search our names, Clay and Buck. Listen and subscribe.
Under threat, it's already inside the house. I can't be scared away or negotiated with. You can't call the cops on me. You can't even see me. I'm the threat of family fire. And as long as your guns aren't stored securely, I'll be there. Protect your family. Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by Brady and the Ad Council.
All right, jumping back into it here with John.
About the issues that matter to Montana.
I was too fast.
This is Montana Talks with Aaron Pratt.
All right, there we go. Okay, hey, I was so excited to chat with John there. I cut off the big announcer guy there. No, I thought I missed it because I put my headset down for a moment, and I was trying to cue up a soundbite from Harmeet Dhillon. You know, we were talking about the Department of Justice. She now heads up the Civil Rights Division. And John, during the break, he was saying, you know who's doing it like they need to be doing it is Harmeet Dhillon. So I was like, ooh, I got to play this soundbite. She was on with Tucker Carlson, I think, last week. So that's what I was queuing up there. So that's why I thought I was slow putting my headset back on, but I was a little too quick, cut off the announcer guy.
Didn't she say in that interview that she got over 100 of these attorneys to quit, which is just beautiful.
Well, let me see here. It was a Daily Caller story. Fiefdom. Harmeet Dhillon tells Tucker Carlson that DOJ lawyers had crying sessions. They had crying sessions after Trump's 2024 win. These people work at the Department of Justice. They're supposed to be some of the toughest justice bringers in the world, toughest lawyers out there. And they had crying sessions because the guy they wanted to be president did not win?
You hear her as she's talking to Tucker there. She has never worked in government before. She worked 30 years in private practice. So she's just kind of scoffing and laughing at the notion that these people think that they can have their crying session and their resist sessions. And she caught them in emails, passing around emails about how to resist her edicts. And she's like scoffing, like, we're going to run this like the private sector. And if you don't do what you're told, you're out of here.
It's even better than you remember, John. Between Trump's inauguration in January and May, an estimated 250 attorneys in the DOJ's Civil Rights Division, which is roughly 70%, resigned, according to NPR. I had to plug my nose there while I said NPR.
Hold on there, Aaron. I need a minute. I need a minute on that 250 number. Hold on.
He's in the steam room now, just meditating.
I need a cold cloth.
Why does it smell like eucalyptus in here? So it's very good news.
But you know what else she's doing is she is out there just going after people, and she's right there on social media, and any of these politicians, these government officials that are popping up just right out of their mouths, like the mayor of Chicago, just outright saying they're going to discriminate against people, she just says, okay, civil suit filed against you. We'll see what's going on there, buddy.
All right. Well, I was going to get to our caller on line one here, but looks like they're having a deep conversation there with Tim and Billings and our producer, Kate. Okay, the line's freed up now. Let's see. Hey, Tim and Billings, are you there? What's going on?
Good morning, gentlemen. So I think we could have a real-time experiment on exposing the hypocrisy of these leftist lunatics when it comes to immigration. And I'm not even going to specify whether it's legal or illegal immigration, just immigration in general. What if we took some of these South African refugees who are fleeing absolute and complete racism and fleeing for their lives and having their property stolen at the threat of death, and we'll have some of these judges that are more conservative in areas, we'll have them house them, and we'll see how much the screeching and squawking and the lunatic left, they will blow up and they will completely have meltdowns. I'd love to see that experiment in real time.
Well, look at the way they're already blowing up and melting down. These people loved so-called refugees coming from every third world terrorist haven you could possibly imagine. But now, some farmers fleeing genocide, and the left-wing reporters and the Democrats take the side of genocide. They literally took the side of genocide, as Jesse Waters so well put it. No surprise there, though, really, John? I mean,
and they're claiming that it's not happening when everyone knows it is. And everyone knows it. This has been going on for 20, 30 years. I had some of my partners, one of my partner on the job, that came from there. And this was going on back in the 80s. I mean, for these people to deny this is just their typical sociopath lying against anything that doesn't go along with their agenda.
Well, is it just that they're so anti-Trump that because Trump brings in these actual refugees from South Africa, that they're going to attack it just because Trump did it, just like they attack anything else Trump does that's good for America? I think it actually has more to do with the anti-white racism.
Yep.
And Jeremy Carl, who wrote the book about anti-white racism, obviously he would agree, and he's got a research. But that's what it is that there is an anti-white racism amongst even these white liberals. That they it's their version of virtue signaling is, oh, we don't want these white farmers coming to America. We don't want them coming to Montana because they're white.
Well, the worldwide, this goes against the worldwide narrative, is that it is whites who have been and continue to be these imperialist conqueror murderers. Okay, so you cannot, anything that goes against that narrative, you ever show that blacks in Africa are doing that same thing, oh no, we can't have that. No.
Well, on an interesting front, so tonight on the History Channel, this Sitting Bull documentary airs, and I was watching the trailer of it, and it's all like, you know, Sitting Bull was standing up against a similar and, you know, he saw the white people invading. You know what the interesting story about Sitting Bull is his fight for freedom. He was against being forced onto reservations by the government. And it's interesting because if you were to speak out against reservations today, if you were to use Sitting Bull style rhetoric against government reservations, they would call you a racist. But Sitting Bull, who's this Native American warrior, did not want to be forced under reservations by the government. He says he basically would not want to trade his freedom for some beans and some tack and some coffee, essentially.
Oh, and he was dead on. But see, the liberals have to have that group of people that are constantly dependent on them. That's why they would be against that right away.
Stoke the division. And that's what I wonder if DiCaprio's film is going to do.
I'm Evan Brown. Could this be the year for a federal uniform gun law? So-called constitutional carry has become the norm in a number of states. That's when permits are available but not required to own, buy, or carry, either concealed or openly, a gun. And now 24 state attorneys general are demanding Congress pass a federal law which could create the standard for the entire country. Those state AGs are all Republican. Their letter to House Speaker Mike Johnson and Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries is pushing for the passage of House Bill 38, which would require states to honor each other's carry permits, sort of how they accept each other's driver licenses. As of now, states offer reciprocity agreements with regard to carry permits, but some states refuse to do so. Opponents to H.R. 38 argue it violates states' rights by forcing them to accept permitting by another state that might have fewer requirements. And those are your bullet points. I'm Evan Brown, Fox News.
This is the Montana Economic Minute.
You can't describe Montana's property tax in 60 seconds, but you can identify the root of its current problems. It's really just one thing, and that is the meteoric rise in the value of residential real estate. Before the year 2000, home price growth and income growth in Montana were evenly matched, which makes sense. But since that year, home prices have risen much faster, with periods of rocket fuel price growth happening at least twice, now and in the years before the Great Recession. The beauty of the property tax, its stability and predictability, has been ripped to shreds as a result. Those galloping prices have made the residential share of the property tax base grow to more than 75% of the total. 20 years ago, it was just over half. Is it any wonder that homeowners' share of the tax burden has grown as well? Either until we fix housing markets or find another tax, we can expect more of the same. I'm Patrick Parkey.
Brought to you by the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research.
Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, we're taking your phone calls and more as we chat with John Jackson, the Joker from X. You can follow him on X at PVT Joker US, at Private Joker US. And, of course, I'm there as well, x.com/Aaron Flint. Well, earlier we were talking about Harmeet Dhillon. Harmeet Dhillon actually joined us right here in our Montana Talks studios when she came to both Yellowstone and Flathead counties. She was a keynote speaker for a couple of different events, including Lincoln Reagan dinners. And so it was so cool to have her in studio. She's been a fighter now for several years. But she was on Tucker Carlson's podcast. And, yeah, she was talking about how these DOJ lawyers held crying sessions after President Trump won the election back in 2024. And, by the way, Tucker Carlson references General Flynn, and General Flynn is going to be with us here on this show later this week because he's going to be here in Montana later this week. He is the keynote speaker for the Gallatin County Lincoln Reagan dinner. But, you know, the left went after General Michael Flynn in President Trump's first term because he knew where the bodies were buried. He knew the intelligence apparatus. He knew the deep state. And so they had to get him out of there. And Tucker Carlson talked about how Harmeet Dhillon is one of those smart lawyers who also knows the deep state and how they operate, especially within in the Department of Justice.
I mean, Mike Flynn is the most famous example of this, but like...
It is. We've learned some lessons, and there are always new ways, and there is a deep state. And, you know, just yesterday I had a conversation with one of my colleagues about the resistance that he was encountering, and I had my feedback. But part of my background is as an employment lawyer.
Yes.
And so, you know, we're not making some mistakes that some people who are, right, you know, fair, simply defense lawyers might have made. I have a plaintiff's lawyer mentality, and so... You know, I think, what would I do if I were the other side? And, you know, so I think about that. So, you know, we're giving people clear direction and opportunities. And if they don't want to take those opportunities and they want to be in resistance mode, this is not the place for them. And so, you know, there are career paths elsewhere, and many people have chosen to take that. Some of them regretted it. Some of them tried to come back. I think it is best that people who have passions to do something that's opposite of what the president's current agenda is should do that elsewhere. not on the taxpayer dollar.
All right. But yes, she talked about the crying sessions and more. But in reality, John, though, the best way to reform the deep state is to get a lot of these people who are working to undermine the United States of America out of those jobs in the first place. So send somebody like Harmeet Dhillon in, and because them quitting is the easiest way to fix the problem.
Watch her Twitter feed, and she said on Sunday, this is Sunday, Memorial Day weekend, she said, yeah, I just got off a conference call with all of my heads, and we're planning this strategy and that strategy and that strategy. That's what we want to see from our warriors up there in government, is that until you get your arms wrapped around this thing, you are working 7 days a week, nights, holidays, weekends, doesn't matter what it is. And you see her, like, she'll take a picture from her porch swing and her home on the weekend where she's saying, yeah, I'm knitting and doing some gardening, and oh yeah, just opened up a investigation against the mayor of this city for discrimination. You know, she is constantly, it's never stopping. She's working all the time.
All right, into the phone lines we go here. Let's see, Francis in Big Fork. Francis, what's on your mind this morning?
Well, I'm changing the subject that I was going to.
That's all
and
right.
I met her at Kalispell. I mean, Dhillon, and she was very professional and strong. You weren't going to mess with her.
That's right.
Is my intake.
Yeah. Well, I like the point that she made at her speech where she said that there's some people that say, well, I'm an economic conservative, or I'm a social conservative, or whatever, or I'm an economic conservative, not a social conservative. And she said, look, you really can't have one without the other. That basically that social liberalism is the gateway drug to economic liberalism. And that's what we're seeing with the woke movement here today, which is they start with the social cultural stuff, And then that starts to bleed into the economics. John, your thoughts?
Yeah, that's where, and yeah, I've been shouting about this on your show for years now. That, I guess you could call me, I'm a fiscal conservative absolutist in that any Republicans out there that I ever see that are ever voting for and pushing for more taxes and more government, I tell them you are wrong, because that is the crux of all of it. The money is the water of the swamp, and that doesn't matter if it's Washington, D.C. or Helena, Montana. Cut that money, cut that government, cut taxes.
All right, let's go back into the phone lines here. Let's see who is next up. We've got the mighty Human Z on the phone line. Z, what's going on?
Gentlemen, good morning, good morning. I've got bad news. You know, this cancellation culture is out of hand. As we all know, I'm 127 years old, and I went to the bank this weekend. My Social Security number was yanked. You know, there are 12 million of us in this nation. That's why they call us the nation of the fountain of youth. Ponce de Leon in Florida, he found it. I went there and drank those waters decades ago. I want my Social Security number back. This is not right. 12 million of us, we are an awesome force. Thank you, and please support my cause.
All right. Yeah, this is one of the things that Elon Musk and Doge identified, was just the fraud, waste, and abuse within the Social Security system. And then you got all these illegal aliens that were getting Social Security numbers under the Biden regime. The numbers skyrocketed in his final year or two in office.
So much of what Doge is doing can be taken care of internally. And just like Z is pointing out there, that's that 12 million of these people that were over, what, 100 and something years old. And then they need to go after all of the illegals. They've identified how many millions of illegals that Joe Biden gave away Social Security numbers to. And all of that money that's being wasted out there is sent out to NGOs. And really, really, if the average citizen out there had any idea how much of their tax money is being wasted and stolen, I mean, you would have people marching in the streets with pitchforks and torches. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah. Let's see. Speaking of Biden and who really was running the White House for the entire 4 years he was there as the supposed commander in chief. I don't know if you saw this. I heard the audio on Fox and Friends earlier this morning, but I was trying to track down the actual audio here. But this is a report from Fox News Radio. First, Democrats said, "Don't believe your lying eyes." Then came slow acknowledgments of Biden's decline, both publicly and in multiple new books. One specific allegation revealed that a top Biden official justified using undemocratic tactics to conceal Biden's condition, all to stop Trump. So Alex Thompson, who is the author of this book out with Jake Tapper, he said on Fox News Sunday, quote, "A lot of these people do sincerely believe that Donald Trump was and is an existential threat to democracy. So you can rationalize anything." So ex-Obama speechwriter John Lovett admitted that he downplayed Biden's decline. Apparently he did an interview with Biden, or he was at the Biden White House, and he had thought about speaking out publicly about the obvious decline that he saw with Joe Biden with his own eyes. He says, quote, "I didn't know exactly what was going on behind the scenes, but if Joe Biden is the candidate, I want him to effing win." So he talked about how he covered up what he saw with his own eyes with Joe Biden because he simply just wanted Joe Biden to win. And then the point that they made on Fox and Friends this morning was when you put out these statements that Donald Trump is an existential threat to democracy, they believe they can do anything they want. They can do anything to try to stop him.
Important to remember, that's been going on since 2017. They declared that in 2017. There are no more rules. There are no more laws with Donald Trump involved. We can do anything we want just because he's so evil. And see, I got news for you guys. Police officers and law enforcement out there have been, you know, up in that for years now, and they get fired and go to jail when they do that stuff against rapists, robbers, murderers, drug traffickers, okay? You can't do it. You know, I was going back, Aaron, and looking at some of this stuff. I mean, Have you once heard Jake Tapper talk about how every single press conference with Joe Biden, he already was given the note cards of who to call on and already what the question would be, and that reporter was already a scripted actor and going to ask them that question? And they're trying to act like, oh, we didn't know any of this. They were all in on
they
it.
They were all in they on it. Exactly what it. I was just going to say as well. Yeah, the Daily Caller has a story here. Biden aide admits staff did, quote, undemocratic things because Trump was an existential threat to democracy. Oh, my goodness. Oh, yeah, because that speechwriter I told you about had apparently it worked for Joe Biden. Unless that's another interview altogether, but they were all absolutely in on it. The DailyWire.com has this headline. Legacy media shocked to discover that Jake Tapper lied about everything. There were photographs, like the cameraman would get photographs of Joe Biden and the note cards he had in front of him that had the reporter's face and name on it and exactly what their question was going to be and exactly what his answer should be. Like, and so they all colluded. I don't even, if I have a guest, a Republican guest on this show, if their staffer says, hey, can you give us a list of questions ahead of time? No, that's not what we do around here. That's not what anybody in this business does. You might say, hey, well, I thought we could cover A, B, C, and D, but you don't give specific questions, and you still might cover something that's not on that set list just because there might be news of the day stuff. And so, and these people who call themselves journalists dang sure shouldn't be doing that type of nonsense.
Oh, you do that to me all the time. We'll be sitting in a break talking about one thing, and we'll come on the air, and you will just throw a freaking 100-mile-an-hour fastball at me. I'm like, hey, what do you think about this, John? I'm like, oh, I'm not. I just pulled it up yesterday. They had that incident where Biden went to sleep mumbling right there in a press conference with a foreign leader, went to sleep, and everybody's looking around like, what just happened here? Oh, no. Oh, no, we had no idea that he was a doddering old nursing home patient.
Yeah. How did we miss this one at all? COVID came from China? No way. How did we miss all this stuff? Get ready.
Montana Talks, uniting the Treasure State, one conversation at a time. Here's your host, Aaron Flint.
All right, John Jackson in the house. We're taking your phone calls and more. 406-294-0970 if you want to jump in on the conversation here. Let's see. We've got Tom in Billings, or is he in Quantico? Let's see. Either way, Tom, good to hear from you.
Yes. Good morning, Aaron.
Morning.
I am in Quantico for the next 3 months.
Oh, wow. 3 months, huh?
I'll bring that to you here in a little when I get back. But as far as the Democrat Party, people got to realize that they do not want masculine males. They don't want women driving F-150s and going hunting and shooting guns. The Democrat Party is as far as a Butte Democrat, they are gone. They don't want any masculinity. They want Tim Walz and his tampons in the bathroom, and they want all these other people. The Democrat Party is basically like the Libertarian Party. It's a drinking club now. They are doing everything they can to throw themselves under the bus. And all they want to do, they're pretty smart when it comes to this. They want us Republicans and us libertarian conservatives to basically start infighting and not think about the task at hand.
Good point.
Term limits is how it needs to work in Helena. Term limits is how it, because all they're doing is working for the next election, including in Helena.
That's a couple of really good points there. One, the Democrats want to sit back. As crazy as they are, they will want to put fuel on the fire and get Republicans fighting each other. It's kind of funny that Republicans in Washington are getting along better than the Republicans in Helena did. Term limits, that's an interesting sidebar, John. We have term limits for the Montana legislature, but we don't have a limit on how often somebody can run. So like, okay, you're limited. Well, you can only be in the state Senate this long. You can only be in the state House this long. So then what you have is you have guys that serve their full time in the House, then they run for the state Senate, and then they go back to the House again and then back to the Senate. So effectively, you're getting some of these same people that have been there for 20, 30 years, and so that seems to me to go against the whole intent of term limits.
Oh, I had no idea. So the law is you're termed out consecutive terms, but you can come back later and run again.
Yeah, if there's enough of a gap in there. So that's why you'll see people that'll go from the Senate to the House. And so it's, to me, that's something that really, you know, maybe we need to look at reforming here. Because I think that's part of the challenge in Helen is that you get some people that really know how to game the system and really know how to maneuver the system.
Well, you know what I found kind of odd is it seems like a lot of incestuous activity going on up there. It's like these seats become these family affairs where, you know, husband and wife and mom and dad and the kids and the cousins, all of them with your last name, are all over the place.
But there's some great couples serving in the legislature, and then there's some ones where you're like, what are you guys doing? My goodness. I mean, the Vintons, Mike and Sue Vinton, do a great job. They're out of the Billings area. Sue Vinton is House Majority Leader, if I remember right. Mike Vinton, newer to the legislature, but hey, that's an example. I think we would have had a much, much better legislative session if we had, you know, for example, the Knutsons still in there, for example, like Rhonda Knutson. I hope she chooses to run again in Northeast Montana. I think Medicaid expansion really hurt conservatives in the primary because, you know, there were people in those rural areas that truly were concerned about what was going to be the future of their local rural hospital if that didn't go through. I also think that in Great Falls, I think the Defend the Guard Act, as it was known, I think that really hurt the conservative candidates in the Republican primaries in the military-heavy town like Great Falls. And so sometimes, you know, conservative candidates get boxed in on an issue or two that can cost them even a primary election, and then we get stuck with more liberal, you know, more moderate or liberal leaning, representatives in the legislature.
Speaking of stuff that hurts conservatives out there, there's that they're still kicking around this stuff, and they were kicking around this time the Sheriff's First thing, you know, that whole bill.
Yeah, it's very popular with big portions of the base.
What it proposes to do is force all law enforcement that would come into a county to call the sheriff first to include federal agents. And, you know, nobody is more pro-law enforcement than me, 30 years in the game, right? But see, I know two things. First of all, that is unconstitutional on its face. It would lose the very first court challenge because it's written right there in the Constitution, bro. The Supremacy Clause.
Okay? See, some people, though, some people would call you a rhino for not supporting a sheriff's first law.
Yeah. Supremacy Clause, okay? second of all, see, I know Montana. There's already great relationships out there between federal, state, and local partners.
And we've got great sheriffs. We've got great sheriffs. But what do you do if you go to a liberal? Sheriff Springer in Gallatin County is doing a great job by everything we're hearing. But he's got, you know, far left county attorney and far left county commissioner standing in the way of ICE. But what if you didn't have a good sheriff in Gallatin County, you know, and heck, there was wasn't there just some corruption story that just came out about, you know, law enforcement working with some of the escaped convicts and things like that. So what if you have a Democrat mayor with a corrupt police chief? What if you have a far left county that puts in a far left corrupt sheriff? So you're going to say, well, guess we can't do anything about the situation, and they can just get away with anything?
Well, see, with those great partnerships already out there, this kind of thing not only throws a wrench in the middle of all of that, okay, but it also, that brings up number three, which you just brought up, is that I grew up in the South, bro, with, you know, the place that was famous historically for you would have a sheriff of a county that was the absolute king of that place, and what does that, when he had no check and balance on him, what does that happen? Absolute power corrupts absolutely. Absolutely. Those guys are running moonshine and running weed and running dope and protecting their buddies. It's not a good thing.
Or, the Democrats used it for their racism in the South back in the day as well. I want to go back to something else Thomas talked about there, about the Democrats and attempting to appeal to men. So I heard this on Fox and Friends First. I think it was this morning or maybe over the weekend. So the Democrats have a new plan, and the plan is called SAM, which is, you know, I mean, it's kind of like Pat, you know. It could, you could, yeah, there's men named Sam.
Sam I am.
There's women named Sam.
Sam I am.
So is it Samuel or is it Samantha? It's pretty pretty ambiguous here, but then again, so are the Democrats.
One of the rifts in the Democrat Party is over the use of quote-unquote buzzwords, and if the push for inclusivity is actually just alienating common-sense voters. While progressives believe talking about equity and food insecurity or birthing people is vital, most people, moderates, everybody, feel differently. The Washington Post piece says, quote, they contend that liberal candidates too often use language from elite, highly educated circles that suggest the speakers consider themselves smart and virtuous while casting implied judgment on those who speak more plainly. Hardly a formula for winning people over. And this is on top of a New York Times report that Democrats are spending $20 million to gain back support from young men. It is even codenamed SAM, which is short for speaking with American men, a strategic plan.
Yeah, they need a strategic plan to speak to men, and it's called SAM. I don't know if
is
it's
that SWAM, speaking with American
SWAM.
SWAM.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Well, you know,
it's not just hilarious. They're spending $28 million to come up with a guide manual to tell them how to talk to everyday people because they don't know how to talk to everyday men because they're a bunch of elite snobs who look down on the rest of the country.
Did you see Tim Walz admitted why they chose him to be VP with Kamala? Because he was the guy that could code talk to men.
Yeah.
And that shows you how absolutely clueless they are that they would pick that effeminate little communist to talk to men.
And a guy who dodged a deployment to Iraq with his men calling himself a code talker.
Governor Jazz Hands. Governor Jazz Hands is going to talk to men. Yeah.
All right, let's go to Kat in eastern Montana. Kat, what's going on?
Hey, good morning, Aaron and John, and thanks for veterans. I just want to really liked what you talked about with the Doge cuts. And how they can't be part of the big, beautiful bill, although they kind of are, and they have to be included in the rescission bill in 2026. I think it's very important that we understand that, because there's a lot of misinformation floating out there. So as much as I don't like rhinos in Congress, I also like to deal in facts. So we will see those line-by-line Doge cuts in a 2026 rescission bill. So thank you for covering that this morning. I also wanted to very quickly touch on a report to your listeners about a Flathead Valley nonprofit called the Sparrow's Nest, which is supposed to be servicing homeless high school students. This nonprofit took my daughter to have her COVID vax without my permission and tried to help my daughter trans a few years ago. I have now traced the Sparrow's Nest to USAID money and George Soros. And this organization is embedded in our Flathead Valley high schools because they are preying on one of my friend's daughters. This needs to end once and for all, Aaron and John. And the out-of-control nonprofits and NGOs and bad actors will be held accountable.
All right, we got to hold it there. We got to hit the hard break. Hey, if you can, shoot us a message on the Montana Talks app about the Soros connections in particular, because I want to reach out to them. Thanks.
Your morning espresso starts right here. It's the Sean Hannity Morning Minute.
In response to Israel, Iran's top diplomat warned the Iranian foreign minister on X, writing, I have called on the international community to take effective preventive measures against the continuation of Israeli threats, which, if unchecked, will compel Iran to take special measures in defense of our nuclear facilities and materials. We are likewise of the firm conviction that in the event of any attack against the nuclear facilities of the Islamic Republic of Iran by the Zionist regime, the government of the United States shall bear legal responsibility, having been complicit there. You know what? Who gives a flying Adam Schiff what they think? Nobody cares.
The Sean Hannity Show from coast to coast later today.
Warning. The national debt is spiraling out of control. Trade wars are causing record volatility. And tariffs could cause inflation to make a devastating comeback. Are you ready for what more 2025 could bring? Will you sit on the sidelines and wait? Or will you take action today to help protect your hard-earned retirement savings? And what if you could do it tax and penalty-free? Find out more by requesting your free 2025 gold and silver kit from the top-rated precious metals company, Goldco. Plus, you could get an unlimited bonus silver if you qualify. Help secure your future today. Visit HannityGold.com or call 855-815-GOLD to learn more. That's HannityGold.com or 855-815-GOLD. Visit HannityGold.com or call 855-815-GOLD to learn more. That's HannityGold.com or 855-815-GOLD.
Fox Rocks.
I'm Michelle Pulino. Billy Joel's wife is speaking out following Joel's recent health reveal, thanking fans for their support as the legendary singer takes time to heal. He was diagnosed with normal pressure hydrocephalus, a neurological condition caused by fluid buildup in the brain. Alexis Roderick Joel shared an update through Joel's Instagram alongside a photo of the couple with daughters Della Rose and Remy. She wrote in part, "We are so grateful for the wonderful care and swift diagnosis we received. Bill is beloved by so many, and to us, he is a father and husband who is at the center of our world." She added, "We are hopeful for his recovery and look forward to seeing you all in the future." All Joel's upcoming concerts are now canceled. Justin Bieber made a grand re-emergence after barely performing for the better of 3 years. Bieber joined SZA as part of a grand national tour with Kendrick Lamar at SoFi Stadium in Los Angeles. The pair performed a version of Snooze. That's Fox Rocks on Fox News.
If you've got...
Broadcasting live across the big sky, Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
You know, one of the challenges is when someone makes a claim about an organization, we always got to reach out to the organization, get their response on it. So, yeah, Kat, send me any information that you've got regarding the organization you mentioned in terms of gender-specific care or whatever you want to call it, misgendering people, all that. And then also the Soros stuff, because then what I'll do is I'll reach out to that organization, give them a chance to respond. So I appreciate it. All right, let's see. John Jackson, the Joker from X. Kat was talking about the Doge cuts and the one big beautiful bill that barely passed the U.S. House of Representatives last week. Stephen Miller had a great post on X. He said this. He's the deputy chief of staff for the Trump White House. He says, "I've seen a few claims making the rounds on the big beautiful bill that require correction." Because there's so many good things that's in this big, beautiful bill. I mean, I've got a list of 20 things from the Trump White House right here that I laid out last week on the show. But Stephen Miller, for those of you that haven't seen this yet, I shared the full post on X. He says the first thing is this. They're criticizing the big, beautiful bill by saying it doesn't codify the Doge cuts. A reconciliation bill, which is a budget bill that passes with 50 votes, is limited by Senate rules to mandatory spending only. The Senate rules prevent it from cutting discretionary spending, like the Department of Education or federal grants. The Doge cuts are overwhelmingly discretionary, not mandatory. He says the bill saves more than $1.6 trillion in mandatory spending, including the largest ever welfare reform, a remarkable achievement. And then he also goes after these bogus claims by the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office. The Congressional Budget Office always does this. They count tax cuts as spending, and they claim that the tax cuts add to the deficit, which is a bunch of BS. First off, these Trump tax cuts are already in effect, so you're just continuing what's already in effect. Second off, tax cuts help lead to more revenue, not less, and the CBO always gets that wrong.
Thing that annoys me, and it made me, Miller is my boy. I mean, he's the best warrior that Trump has. But the thing that has always annoyed me is you never hear, go back to Obama's time, Biden's time, you never hear Democrats talking about what they can't do. They just do it. And then they dare you in court to stop them. And here's the other thing about that $1.6 trillion in big quotes that they claim they're cutting. Now, the Medicaid stuff and all that stuff, yes. But most of these cuts is utter Adam bullshit, okay? Because they're doing the standard con that they do, and they, oh, yeah, these cuts are going to be phased in 4 years from now and over 10 years on stuff. And let me tell you something. I didn't just fall off the banana boat here. I've been watching this stuff for 30 years. Those cuts they claim they're going to do, they never do it. Okay, that's just to give them the excuse to pass the spending right now that we're going to do these cuts at some time in the future that they never do.
So if you were the member of Congress right now, would you have voted against it? Because it only passed by one vote. Would you have voted against the big, beautiful bill? This, you know, nothing's perfect. You're never going to get perfect done. But, I mean, former Speaker Newt Gingrich was saying, look, the reason we balanced the budget 4 years in a row is because we had to get things done step by step. And a lot of Republicans never get things done step by step because they're too busy shooting themselves in the foot. That was my emphasis on the last part there.
You're really stuck here because Trump wanted this done to get his tax cuts made permanent. And what you would
and
have
deportations
to do,
and you know, getting more ICE agents and so much more. I mean, a whole list of stuff here, ending the Green News scam and whether that happens as fast as it should or not. But I mean, there was a whole host of things that included. I mean, a lot of good things that you would be saying no to because it's still, you know, isn't perfect.
Well, look at what these New York salty boys did. They got together and as a block said, we're not going to vote for this unless we get this much of that salt deduction stuff. See, that's what you got to do is you got to have a consensus, a group of you, 10 or 20 of you from the Freedom Caucus that are going to say, we're not voting for this as a block unless we get real spending cuts that happen in the next 4 years.
Yeah, but then they do it and then you can't get their votes on anything and so you're in the same position. But it goes to the Senate now.
This is the Montana Economic Minute.
You can't describe Montana's property tax in 60 seconds, but you can identify the root of its current problems. It's really just one thing, and that is the meteoric rise in the value of residential real estate. Before the year 2000, home price growth and income growth in Montana were evenly matched, which makes sense. But since that year, home prices have risen much faster, with periods of rocket fuel price growth happening at least twice, now and in the years before the Great Recession. The beauty of the property tax, its stability and predictability, has been ripped to shreds as a result. Those galloping prices have made the residential share of the property tax base grow to more than 75% of the total. 20 years ago, it was just over half. Is it any wonder that homeowners' share of the tax burden has grown as well? Either until we fix housing markets or find another tax, we can expect more of the same. I'm Patrick Parkey.
Brought to you by the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research.